Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Welcome to our podcast, The Screwtape Letters, Confronting Evil in Our Time. I'm Ian Faith.
And I'm Galen Belinsky. In each episode, we will unpack one of C.S. Lewis's 31 letters and illuminate the nefarious schemes that the devil and his minions play in our world today.
Understanding how the demonic forces seek to separate us from God helps us to expose them,
reject them, and pursue Jesus as the center of our lives.
Subscribe and join us and our guests on this journey, The Screwtape Letters.
My dear Wormwood, I note with great displeasure that the enemy has, for the time being, put a forcible end to your direct attacks on the patient's chastity. You ought to have known that he always does in the end, and you ought to have stopped before you reached that stage. For as things are, your man has now discovered the dangerous truth, that these attacks don't last forever. Consequently, you cannot use again what is, after all, our best weapon, the belief of ignorant humans that there is no hope of getting rid of us except by yielding. I suppose you've tried persuading him that chastity is unhealthy. I haven't yet got a report from you on young women in the neighborhood. I should like it at once, for if we can't use his sexuality to make him unchaste, we must try to use it for the promotion of a desirable marriage. In the meantime, I should like to give you some hint about the type of woman, I mean the physical type, which he should be encouraged to fall in love with, if falling in love is the best that we can manage. In a rough and ready way, of course, this question is decided for us by spirits far deeper down in the hierarchy than you and I. It is the business of these great masters to produce in every age a general misdirection of what may be called sexual taste. This they do by working through the small circle of popular artists, dressmakers, actresses, and advertisers who determine the fashionable type. The aim is to guide each sex away from those members of the other with whom spiritually helpful, happy, and fertile marriages are most likely. Thus, we have now for many centuries triumphed over nature to the extent of making certain secondary characteristics of the male, such as the beard, disagreeable to nearly all the females. And there is more in that than you might suppose. As regards the male taste, we have varied a good deal. At one time we have directed it to the statuesque and aristocratic type of beauty, mixing men's vanity with their desires and encouraging the race to breed chiefly from the most arrogant and prodigal women. At another, we have selected an exaggeratedly feminine type, faint and languishing, so that the folly and cowardice, and all the general falseness and littleness of mind which go with them, shall be at a premium. Since this is a kind of beauty even more transitory than most, we thus aggravate the female's chronic horror of growing old, with many excellent results, and render her less winning and less able to bear children. And that is not all. We have engineered a great increase in the license which society allows to the representation of the apparent nude, not the real nude, in art and its exhibition on the stage or the bathing beach. It is all a fake, of course. The modern world is taught to believe that it is being frank and healthy and getting back to nature. As a result, we are more and more directing the desires of men to something which does not exist, making the role of the eye in sexuality more and more important, and at the same time making its demands more and more impossible. What follows you can easily forecast. That is the general strategy of the moment. But inside that framework, you will still find it possible to encourage your patient's desires in one of two directions. You will find, if you look carefully into any human's heart, that he is haunted by at least two imaginary women, a terrestrial and an infernal Venus, and that his desire differs qualitatively according to its object. Readily mixed with charity, readily obedient to marriage, coloured all through with that golden light of reverence and naturalness which we detest. There is another type, which he desires brutally and desires to desire brutally, a type best used to draw him away from marriage altogether, but which, even within marriage, he would tend to treat as a slave, an idol, or an accomplice. His love for the first might involve what the enemy calls evil, but only accidentally. The man would wish that she was not someone else's wife and be sorry he could not love her lawfully. But in the second type, the felt evil is what he wants. It is that tang in the flavor which he is after. In the face, it is the visible animality or sulkiness or craft or cruelty which he likes, but which by our art can be made to play on the raw nerve of his private obsession. The real use of the infernal Venus is no doubt as prostitute or mistress, but if your man is a Christian, and if he has been well trained in nonsense about irresistible and all-excusing love, he can often be induced to marry her. And that is very well worth bringing about. You will have failed as regards fornication and solitary vice, but there are other and more indirect methods of using a man's sexuality to his undoing. And by the way, they are not only efficient, but delightful. The unhappiness produced is of a very lasting and exquisite kind. Your affectionate uncle, Screwtape.
All right, we're back at it. Screwtape letter number 20. And in Screwtape's spending a lot of time the past three chapters now talking about love, talking about lust, talking about women, marriage, and relationships. And I think for me, it highlights that really, really important point that the two most important decisions that you can make in life, we said it in the last episode, number one is who your God is, and number two is who your spouse is.
Right.
I don't think any decision is going to forecast a life of blessing or a life of cursing than who you marry.
You've probably heard the statement, women don't want to be in a man's head for 5 minutes because they'd run screaming for the exits, right? You know, the battle men have with their sexuality, and I've discussed this, you know, in our men's group at our table. I understand why C.S. Lewis covers this to the degree he does in here, because if you look back through history, the undoing of so many men, even back to, you know, Jezebel and Ahab, right? It's been
the ability to control your belt buckle.
There you go, right? So, and he knows that, but he knows it comes in multiple forms.
Right.
It isn't just, you know, a singular attack. These things come with multiple angles, and he wraps this all up, and at the very end of the letter, he says, which I think he should have said at the start of it, which is, using men's or man's sexuality to his undoing. And then he finishes it with, the unhappiness it produces is of an exquisite and lasting kind.
Mm.
And to me, that is just brilliant, because I've seen so many men who were on a trajectory in life that you thought they were going to have the most incredible life, who were derailed by choosing the wrong partner.
Right.
And he digs into
and
it.
And ultimately pursuing a cheap thrill, and in that case, founding a marriage on top of something that was really just a lustful pursuit.
Right.
Now, I actually want to start here, though. He starts this chapter, the whole premise of this chapter, actually, is that Wormwood is failing to pull this guy away into temptation, with chastity. The patient is actually doing really well with his walk in purity. So now the next step is to, well, let's see if we can marry the wrong woman. That's so, really the premise of the chapter.
So don't you think Screwtape's also saying it from a point of view of like, this is so easy, this bit.
How did you mess this up?
How do you mess this up, right? This is men's failing in a big way.
But I think actually, this is actually, I think, a message of hope that I think we should highlight for our listeners, because then it's something that guys don't hear enough. I think every guy, you know, it's been said there's two men that struggle with sexual temptation, dead men and liars, the only type two that don't struggle. And it just is a reality. But to say that you can never live free of it or never have victory over it is a lie, and I think it's a lie that a lot of people end up believing. And Screwtape actually makes the point. And starts out the chapter saying, I note with great displeasure that the enemy has, for the time being, put a forcible end to your direct attacks on the patient's chastity. That whatever this guy's doing, he's walking with the Lord, he's, you know, picking good friends, picking his company, choosing his entertainment carefully, watching what he puts in front of his eyes, and he's actually walking a life of purity, and he hasn't found a good girl yet. He's set up for a win in life. Right. And I think it's something that you can have. There should be some hope. And there's a lot of good resources, a lot of good things to be doing in life, but guys need to have hope that living a life of sexual purity, especially before marriage, is going to serve you so well, because you need to continue to live in sexual purity after marriage.
Right.
And have hope that it is something that can be achieved.
And the failings that a lot of men have, and look, you know, the people who have failed at that and have found the Lord and say to themselves, well, how can I ever live well with a relationship with God because I've already been promiscuous? There is forgiveness. There is grace within there. And it's a battle that isn't a one battle. It's a war
it's a
with
lifetime.
Many battles.
Right.
And that's something to understand in here, that you know, that lack of chastity does become unhealthy unless you're married, because it just ends up being, in a lot of ways, a downward spiral for both men and women.
Right.
You know, not just for men. So, yeah, he digs heavily into this. I love the way he actually notes, Screwtape notes, that there is a lower hierarchy rather than a hierarchy of spirits that are basically the sexual demon spirits. It's almost like there's a department of sexual demons within the underworld.
But a specific type of demon that programs what the humans are supposed to be attracted to sexually from age to age. I thought it was very
interesting. An influence in that.
Right.
There's an influence
from season to season, generation to generation. They can kind of pull the levers and influence what we're attracted to in one way or another.
Yeah, it's funny, because when I was growing up, when I was a very young child, Twiggy was around, and she was basically skin and bones. And then all of a sudden, the society was being pushed on all the magazines, women with bosoms, right? So, and they were larger women. And then, you know, even lately, you've seen where even Sports Illustrated had a very overweight model on the front cover.
There's some woke term for that. I can't remember what it's called, but you know.
But even go back to the Renaissance, right? You had the Michelangelo and everyone painting women who were very bigger women. So that was the taste of the day,
right?
And like you said, that it's from season to season, time to time. They're guiding what men should find appealing sexually appealing or the latest thing.
I also find it really interesting. He programs into society he's trying to get one gender to dislike traits and attributes of the opposite gender.
Yeah.
He says in there, he's basically, you know, he talks about the beard. I don't know why the demonic is trying to attack the beard. I think it's one of the most heinous things that the demonic can attack. You know, I think the beard is one of the most natural things of God, but tries to make it disagreeable to all females. And again, having to program in the mind of men what they should and should not like, and putting that high level of critique of, you know, that physical critique and sexual desire in a man, can be used to pull guys aside, can be used to pull guys, you know, off track, so to speak.
Well, it even says in here that they point out that entertainment is used, you know, the stage, the influencers are used to drive sexual perversions and tastes and body types. But so there's actually a relationship that even C.S. Lewis saw back in the 30s and the 40s, and he probably saw it before that, where that was being used to drive, hey, men, this is the type of woman you should like with these traits.
Mm-hmm.
Because they knew that that is the most powerful way to, and to this day, they're still doing that, whether it's the type of women they're pushing or the type of women that they're actually celebrating, right? So, you know, you look today, you've got entertainers who are, I'm an ex-drug dealer, or I used to actually, you know, beat men, and now I'm seen as like someone who should be a sex symbol to men.
Right.
And that's actually being promoted and celebrated within the entertainment industry.
Right.
So that men will find it, that that's what they want. And it is actually used as a way as well within the entertainment industry to push men away from sexual norms. And I think they do it to push men away before they even do it to push women away. Because I think men's sexual proclivity will never be understood by women. I think in a way we're far more susceptible and weaker when it comes to sexual temptation mm-hmm. than women are. And maybe it's a fear thing. Maybe it's because we're not as afraid as most women would be in that situation. But yeah, it's something that...
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Even him back then, looking and writing through these Screwtape letters, knew that as a way of, like you said, bringing the patient off his trajectory
mm-hmm.
to where he could end up with a good wife and a good family and a good marriage, they needed to throw as much in front of him as they could.
Right, right. But it also has an effect on women. Throwing that, you know, getting guys to, like, yep. you know, have this crazy perfect image and constantly lust over the ideal perfect woman, which also is unfair to women. I mean, most guys are fat and out of shape, but
yeah,
really, barely anything to look at. But you know, but what it ends up doing to the women is they have this chronic pursuit of looking young and looking perfect. He has a really interesting line in there. He says, "Since this kind of beauty even more transitory than most," talking about, you know, looking young and beautiful and perfect and skinny. It's this thing that you have to spend your whole life pursuing. And I think women should take care of themselves. But it creates this idol and this god. We thus aggravate the female's chronic horror of growing old
right.
with many excellent results
yeah.
and render her less willing and less able to bear children. They end up spending their most valuable years of their life, a woman in particular, trying to look and be perfect for a man, and by the time a man finally settles down and marries one, you've wasted some valuable years.
What's amazing is that he wrote that in 1939 to 42.
Right, in the 30s and 40s.
But that he was even seeing that happen then when the life expectancy probably wasn't as old as it is now.
Right.
And there's a point there which is as well where people who don't have faith, don't have a belief in God, but believe in science, also reject the idea or the comment that women are in their prime at a certain age,
right.
even though it's actually scientifically true.
Right.
They're actually in their prime, as in they're more ready and able to produce a healthy baby mm-hmm. at that point than they are when they're 40 plus.
Right.
And so women are really, it isn't men, like you said, it isn't men who are just influencers. Men are influenced on the sexual level. Women then become influenced on the, for me to then find a good man, I have to adapt to what men want.
Right.
But then they're looking at what the wrong men want.
Right.
The men who have sold out to this idea that, oh, all of a sudden big butts are the thing all of a sudden, right? And you've got even to, in our day, women who are going to foreign countries and having butt implants.
Right.
So their butt looks bigger. Because that's the sexual perversion image right. that Hollywood
that's
portraying.
That's the taste of the day, right.
Right? Through its musicians, through its artists, through its actresses, through its dancers. And now everyone wants to be that.
Right.
That they go into those lens to it. But what they're, like, I think to what you said, which is they're missing out on the best days of their lives. Mm-hmm. The best days of their lives are not waking up and doing the walk of shame at 6 a.m. because they couldn't remember where they slept the last night and who they woke up next to.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they may think for a moment that I'm living my best life until they end up getting to that age where they say to themselves, there's got to be more to life than this. But have I gone so far down the wrong road that how do I get back?
Right.
And I know a lot of women who have been down this. It's a funny thing. I lived in Redondo Beach for a while in California. And I had a friend there who was very wealthy, lived in a penthouse on the beach. And he told me one day, he said, the funniest thing about this place is that when the women hit 30, they disappear. I'm like, what do you mean disappear?
Hmm.
He said, they leave. He said, they get to that point where, and it usually hits a woman in around 30, is that if I don't get my act together soon, I'm never going to have a family. I'm never going to get married. And he said...
Well, she's right.
Right. And the life there was always just fun.
Right.
And then they realize that they can't stay here.
Can't
and
live in Neverland forever. Yeah.
So in a lot of ways, they have to go and create a false identity.
That's Fire Island in New York City.
Is it the same thing?
Yeah,
like that?
No, that's... Yeah.
Right. So they actually have to leave and go and establish basically a new identity for themselves. And actually a new story.
Mm.
Because, hi, I've slept with 400 guys. Would you be into marrying me? Doesn't go down really well when a guy's looking for a wife.
Right. Right, I got to ask the Dr. Phil question. How's that working out for you?
There you go, right? And so that's interesting that he's got it both ways in there. And especially with the less willing and able to mm-hmm. bear children.
Right.
Because it's true. You get older as a woman. You have to then start going on in vitro fertilization. There's more chances of having deformities. There's more chances of miscarriages. All of that gets when women get outside of their prime.
Mm.
But I think, as I say, I think it's just fascinatingly ironic for these women who deny God, deny faith, deny Jesus, and at the same time will go, what do you mean it's being my prime? But I lean on science the whole time.
Right.
And it works the same way.
But it's just interesting to see how what the enemy does is he takes sexuality and turns it, which turns a good thing, which is a gift from God,
yeah.
and he turns it into a god. You know, you can view, my pastor says, you can view sex as gross. Some people are afraid of sex. It's icky and nasty. A lot of your, you know, certain types of Christians, people that have been through abuse, some people view it as a god. I treat it like a god, and it's like it's the best thing ever, and I'm going to idolize sexuality, and that's going to inform the aesthetic. That's going to form, you know, what people like. But what God designed is sex as a gift.
Yes.
And the enemy is trying to turn that up on its head, and when he does that by turning sex into a god, actually the thing that takes a cost is marriage and family, which is what God designed sex for.
Right, exactly.
There's kind of a terrible demonic irony behind the whole thing when you think about it.
No, absolutely. And if you go back to the Roman Empire and Caligula, and, you know, C.S. Lewis talks about guiding sex away from norms, and you look at, you know, eunuchs, concubines, the sex with boys that men had in both Roman and Greek cultures back then, The whole idea of the virgins and were held in a different esteem, and even sacrificing virgins, it's anything but the goal for a good society, a good family, and a good place to bring up children.
Right. You know, it's interesting. I used to think, you know, I was born in 87, grew up in the 90s and the 2000s, and I used to think that, you know, there are a lot of issues in the church and a lot of issues that Christians should find important. But I always thought, like, oh, marriage and sexuality issues, like, it's an important one, but it's just, like, one important issue, and, you know, among all the others.
Right.
And when you see it under attack so powerfully in the world today, there's nothing under attack more than the norm for the family. And, I mean, look at what's happening with the attacks on gender identity.
Yep.
You know, now you're a bigot if you actually think that male and female exist, and that's it. And it's like, nothing is more destructive to a society. And I also believe a human being's pursuit and ability and propensity and to have happiness the way God intended than living out sexuality the way God made us to be.
Right.
And that is just so under attack. And this poor guy in the chapter, he's actually living in a pure way, but still the Satan has a way of like, well, now let's deceive him to marry the wrong person.
But I think what C.S. Lewis does brilliantly in here, he actually describes that relationship where men want this, so women give that. Women exacerbate this, and men give that. And it becomes a spiraling downward effect to where everybody suffers.
Yeah.
And it isn't just a one-way street. It isn't like, oh, men are pigs. Because women go and get the butt implants.
Right.
Right? They go and get the excessive boob jobs.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you have this situation where it is that spiraling down effect where to find then a good woman, and Screwtape talks in here about, like, thou shalt not commit adultery or covet thy neighbor's wife, because he's talking to find that good or terrestrial woman.
Mm-hmm.
You find her maybe already married to somebody else.
Right. Well, and I think a lot of times it's easy to see something that somebody else has already built and acquired and attained in life.
Yeah.
And not that a wife is something that you need to build, but I think you do need to build a healthy marriage.
Yeah.
And it's really easy to, like, well, I don't want to have to do the work to, like, find someone, date them, cast vision, plan a life together, architect a godly life, and end up with a happy spouse. Like, I just want to skip to the end. I want what that guy has. It's almost like, it's that story of the hen, who will help me sow the seed, who will help me till, you know, who
right,
will help
yeah.
me. And it's like, a lot of times guys don't want to do that, but they see it and they, oh, look at that guy, he's married, he's got a nice happy household. Well, that was the fruit of a lot of labor.
But you do build a marriage. My wife's taught me a lot.
Sure.
I think I've taught my wife things, right? So it is that...
Oh, 100%. Again, that, yeah, 100%.
It's a relationship,
it really is,
right?
Yeah.
Where you are building each other up. You
That's a good
hold
point,
each
yeah.
other in check.
Mm-hmm.
And so when other men see that, I have to, actually said to a guy the other night, actually, that the wedding ring is the stink of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And that you'll get single women who are looking for a guy who will see a guy with a wedding ring on at a bar and be like, there's a guy I need to be talking
wow.
to.
Wow.
Because someone's already found him that responsible to marry.
She doesn't want to deal with all these boys over here. She wants a real man.
There you go.
Wow.
Who wants a guy who no one else wants?
Wow.
And it is a thing within, I think more so within women than men, that they want what other women have. So it becomes that situation, because for women it's a very aphrodisiac, a stable, powerful, already married man, because they have all the traits that they're looking for.
Right.
Where men's
right.
failing is, what is that lust of the day? What's that Jezebel
right.
spirit of the day
right.
that gets them? And as I say, one more point, it was Anna Nicole Smith at the times, it was Twiggy, who, you know, two women who figure-wise were diametrically opposed, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that changes. And I think the demonic have been trying lately to even push the transgender as a sexual being.
Right, right.
And say, hey, you need to find this appealing, because then more people
the
do it.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, and it becomes... I think for everyone listening, like, when you're examining your marriage, examining and also counseling single friends on relationships, think about the influences and the powers that are at play.
Yeah.
That it isn't as simple as you may think.
Right.
Now, there are things that, that people will say is like, I don't want an overweight person because that's unhealthy. But at the same time, if that person's just a beautiful person indeed, is chaste, is responsible, all those things, why not? You know?
100%.
Why go with just what the... If she's skin and bones, who cares if she's got the characteristics and then... Right. You can love her and she can love you.
You know, you do want to be physically attracted to your spouse. I think we said this in a previous episode, but the neat thing about living in America is you get to love your pick and pick your love.
Yeah.
Some cultures, you know, it's prearranged for you. You know, your love is picked for you. And in America, yes, we get to choose who we marry, but you get to have the opportunity to fall in love with somebody and then commit to loving that person. So you should be attracted to them, but ultimately you should be... You should be basing it on character,
yep.
Not on looks. And I think that's the deception, the very superficial deception for young guys. You know, at the end of the day, by the time you're 70, 80 years old, gravity wins, you know, 100% of the time.
Right.
So definitely marry on character. I think in this episode, like, my heart always goes out to young guys. You know, if you're in teens, 20s, not married yet, you know, you have so much future and you have so much potential ahead of you.
Yes. Yeah.
If you can just, you know, look at this guy at the start of the chapter, the demonic has failed to tempt him sexually. He's pursuing chastity. He's not sleeping around. He's not watching pornography. Direct a lot of the energy that comes. Young guys have a lot of sexual energy. Direct that towards building a life for your future.
Yeah.
Being the man and refining yourself to be the man who can love a wife, lead a family one day, and be very, very wise. Because the next step, if you're winning and starting to do well in that area of life, you're going to be tempted to marry the wrong person, to look at the wrong piece of criteria. Read Proverbs 31. Don't read it too much. Don't get over idealized about the perfect woman. But look at the character of a godly woman and really be wise about how you walk this, because it is the thing that will set the trajectory for your life more than anything else.
And remember what it said in letter 19. There's that passionate emotional love. Don't base it all just on that.
Yeah, right.
It's got to be that meld of characteristics, personality, love, because that the passion love that you had at the start, if you have a long-term relationship, will wax and wane, but it doesn't wane as in fade away. It just changes to a different type of love.
Right, right.
But it's still a beautiful thing, and it's still a great place to be.
100%. Great chapter, Ian.
Yeah.
C.S. Lewis, third chapter in, talking about marriage, sex, love. A really awesome episode. Looking forward to seeing you back after letter 20, third episode in a row, talking about sex and love and marriage, relationships. A really good one. Looking forward to letter 21 coming up next. We'll see you guys next time.